All right. Questions.
So I have a question.
Okay.
I don't know how to ask this, but let me ask it. So it might sound silly, but I'm preparing to put a fence up in my backyard,
Okay.
and I haven't talked to my neighbors about it, and I was praying about it and thinking, should I have a conversation with them that it's nothing personal to them? It's just that I'm trying to do some work in the backyard, and because the other neighbors on the other side put up a fence too, and I don't want them to think, well, I'm just asking, what do you think?
First of all, let me applaud you because nowadays we have the mentality of I do what I want, it's my property, nobody tells me what to do, unfortunately. So and the Bible, especially on the topic that we're talking about selfishness, people still have that mentality of me first and ask questions later. That's why you see Christians doing some things, hurting people's feelings, doing things and only finding out later that they did wrong, because in their mind, they're like, if I'm okay with it, then you should be okay with it. So just because you have that thought on a overall sense, there's nothing wrong with you putting up a fence in your thing. But the godliness part is because you're saying, I want to make sure that it's not going to offend, and you're doing it in a way where you're thinking of others. So no, that's an excellent question. And it's something that we all should consider. So it's not a right or wrong thing. It's a mentality that we should all think. We have too much today where we do have this entitlement, and to the point where I'm saying you watch Christians do things and they're already convinced they're doing right. When they find out later they've offended, they've hurt, and whatever. And as God said, even about the meat, you have a lot of people that are in their freedoms and they go to the Bible and everything that they're doing is right, but they did it in their freedom, not considering others. That's how we're supposed to be as Christians. We're always supposed to look out with it. So I'm glad you let that out, because that mentality is basically gone. And this is why people kind of, we do things based on our okay. Like, I'll deal with you, and if I'm okay with it, then it's okay. Instead of, I want to make sure, I want to understand it. I'm not saying trying to please, man. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you know what I mean? But it's the understanding of, I want to make sure I'm not offending, and because that's a major part of our ministries. Nope, it's an excellent question. It wouldn't be, you don't have to do it, but it wouldn't be wrong to do it. Even our neighbors, when they put up their fence, it was the one especially even asked that. He said, you know, how I'm going to put this up, and he explained, no, we like privacy sometimes, and his wife swims and all that. I had no problem with it, but he didn't owe me any of that. But just for him presenting that, you see where I'm going with this? Is that's a Christian attribute. That is a Christian attribute. So praise God for that. So thank you for even putting that question out there, because hopefully it'll stick to the rest of our minds, so we don't have, I don't care what other people think mentality, and we do have the, I must care what other people think in the Lord.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
I can tell you when I put my fence up and I wasn't even thinking. I had just put a new fence up because I know I needed a fence. And I didn't ask my neighbor, and she was very offended. She's like, "Well, why would you put a privacy fence up? Did I do something?" I'm like, "Oh my goodness, no, that was years ago." And since then, I was like, "Wow, I didn't even think to even say anything to her." So,
And who would think of that? We're in a society today, and this is, and it's infested the Christian community so bad that we even deal with other people that way. We deal with them almost measuring ourselves, thinking, I think I did enough, or I think I didn't do enough, or I don't care if this offends them. And we have that mentality, and that's why we don't really change. Usually when I hear or see that something offends somebody, I'm going out of my way to make sure I readjust that and not go, oh, well, that's on them. That's the dangerous attitude that is not Christian. So praise God, you know, and thank you for sharing that, Karen, for putting that out there too, because it's just something that's, once again, very non-existent today. And it's very, we don't realize how self-centered it is, even though it's, in a worldly sense, not wrong.
Thank you.
Other questions?
I have one about giving.
Okay.
You know how the Bible tells you, to give, don't let your right hand know what your left hand's doing, and whatever you give is between you and God.
Right.
So I had been given to like charities and different organizations, and then someone came up to me and said, I'm not trying to be, you know, nosy, but what did you give? I wanted to say, you know what I wanted to say, it wasn't your business, but I didn't know what to say.
Somebody asked, what did you give to somebody?
What did I give? Yeah, what was the amount?
I would say, and this is where tone has to be watched and everything, say, you know what, I want to keep that between me and God, if you don't mind. You know what I mean? And just, you see how I just kind of said that. And one, not to for them to judge, or for not to make them feel a certain way, or not even to push them in any certain way, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? So in the nicest way, I would just try to say to them, oh, I try to leave that between me and God, so it doesn't influence or affect anybody in any way.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's just the boldness of people sometimes.
Was it a Christian?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was. Yes. Okay.
I'm telling you, there's qualities and attitudes in Christians today that is just very dangerous that we can't. Okay, next question.
So I have another life situation.
Life situation.
So, it's about someone asked, as a sister of mine, if she could stay with me over Thanksgiving. And typically, you know, that would not be an issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give it to you straight. But she lives in Tennessee, mm-hmm. where there's high numbers of COVID. Mm-hmm. She's fostering 3 small children who are mm-hmm. in and out of school. Mm-hmm. And they'll be on rest. They're not coming. They'll be in respite care while she's traveling up to see us for Thanksgiving. So I'm praying about it because I'm sorry, you guys, but I don't know. She's fully vaccinated and I am as well, but that's not the issue. I mean, as I see it.
So let me ask you, so if she got tested, would that help? Or are you concerned with asking her to get tested?
Well, that was what I was going to ask, but then I didn't want to get, you know, feel like she texts me and asked me today, and I was like, oh boy, here we go. So then mm-hmm. I said, nope, I'm going to pray about it. And then I thought about testing. And then I said, I'm not going to text her back. I'm going to call her and explain to her. And I think she'll understand.
Oh yeah. And but, I think, other than the people that are being unreasonable about it, it's a matter of, if you do have, and you get me sick, what you know what I mean? And not just me and other people and so on and so forth, but you have some people that get offended and bothered by it. Nah, that's life. And I don't mean it in a mean way, because this is an offense, especially once again, to a Christian. I'm not sure if your sister is or not. It's an accountability. There's stewardship in there with mm-hmm. it. So, but you, once again, you're still gentle with it, but you're still holding accountability to them of, hey, just to be safe, you know how the times are right now. Mm-hmm. with this going around, I know we're vaccinated, but you're still that percentage. Do you mind getting tested before you come up here just to be safe? It's as simple as that. You know what I mean? Now, are you going to have people that are going to get offended by that? Absolutely. Because we're in a time right now, like I said, that people are not just offended because I might get sick. People are offended that you even ask me that I might get you mm-hmm. sick. You know what I mean? And until it happens, and that's what I'm saying. So I think error on the side of caution is not as prudence. Once again, is what the Bible teaches us, but there's a nice way of doing it. I think we've made it offensive to ask a wise question. I don't know how that can offend somebody, but it does. So be prepared for that. But that's why you practice it and do it in the most loving way. But I don't see anything wrong with it, especially on the Bible, because you're being wise. Because let's say you don't mm-hmm. and you get sick, and then you get somebody else sick, and then it spreads out and so on and so forth.
Yes.
You know, it falls into that category, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, of course, I worry about being around my other siblings too, who are older, and you know, I mean, even though they're vaccinated, they're older, and you know, and I don't want to. So yeah, that's what I think I'm going to do. But I just wanted to make sure I wasn't being fearful, or I don't think it was fear. It was just sort of, I wanted to act wisely, but then you know, you still think. Mm-hmm. This is my sister, you know, and I shouldn't think that way. I have to think what's the wise way to act.
Exactly. One thing we've done incorrectly is we allowed Christianity over the years to distort the difference between fear and wisdom, and also to blur the lines between bravery and foolishness.
Yes.
You understand that? You'll have people to say, they'll say certain things, and we've seen it in history and we see it today, in which people do stuff in the name of the Lord, and God's like, but I didn't say that. Do you understand that? I mean, simply put, you now put everybody in danger, because you go, Proverbs really gives a lot of stuff in there on a part of me trusting in God is using wisdom. When I use wisdom, I'm showing that I trust in God. The only time it becomes fear is when I don't trust in God.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, if I do something based on what the Bible says, but I'm more scared of people being mad at me, or I'm more scared of hurting you. If God told me to do something in that, like as a pastor, there's a lot of sermons I'm going to preach that hurt people's feelings. If I didn't preach them, I'm held accountable. I can't go, well, it might offend them. I remember there was a church I went to one time, and the minister was going to tell a sermon, and he said, well, there were certain people in there and I didn't want to offend them. And I'm saying, so do you do that every sermon? He says he tries to. So, but that one verse says, if I was trying to keep a man other than God and not God, then I cannot be a servant of God. And and so it's important for us to use wisdom. Wisdom is common. We're seeing it today. Are we using wisdom? You got people using more emotion and other weird stuff and not wisdom. And God, once again, your protection is gone. That's why you have a lot of people even claiming in God and still die from doing stuff that were more foolish than wise. So.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Other questions?
I have one more. And it's on when we were talking about everything has a time and a season in Ecclesiastics. And then, and I think it was down in chapter 3:8, it said about there's a time for love and a time to hate. Mm-hmm. When is there ever a time to hate?
Well, we're supposed to hate sin. We're supposed to hate, you know, anything of the sin, you know, and one term thing that's not in the Bible, you know, they say hate the sin, not the sinner, so on and so forth. But that concept kind of fits in the thing. So there is that time to hate. And if you even remember when in Luke, if you go to Luke 14. And I think a lot of people will. Because of that word in here, people translate it back. They go, no, it must mean this. So if we go into Luke 14 and we start in verse 25. So Luke 14, starting in verse 25, it says, large crowds are traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brother and sister, and yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Now, some read this and they go, oh, isn't that same verse where it says, if you love your father and mother more than me, you're not worthy of me? If you go back to that, it's they're different. The one is coming to him and the one is being in him. Okay, the one in Matthew is talking about, he's telling Christians, okay, now as Christians, if your excuse is, oh, it's my family, it's this and that, he was like, you're not worthy of me. You're really not being a Christian. Before you come to be a Christian, this hate right here is the concept of me not allowing my human love to ever get in the way, that I'm coming into something that he's going to tell me to do some things, and this is what Satan's going to use against us. So if I don't come to him with the mindset of, God, I'm going to do exactly what you tell me, and you see it done today, where Christians will come in, but do something to their family. God all of a sudden gets put in some shelf somewhere, and then, no, that's my family, that's my sister, that's my mom, that's my wife, that's my, and we use that almost as a cry of honor, while God is just saying, you can't be my disciple then. You're basically going to be worthless. And we see that same concept in which we put family ahead of God, while God is the one that's going to really do best for our family. But he used there, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brother, sister, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his own cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. And what that is saying is, I need you to be able to give them all up and do and love them through me. But I have to hate them first in my warped love and love them truly through him. And not realizing there's really only two choices. There is love and there's hate. We add these middle grounds in there. I don't love them, but I don't like them, or something. We say something crazy like it. But, you know, but it's the fact that you either love them or you hate them. So if you're not doing the 1 Corinthians 13, then you're doing the other side. But You see cases like this where he's actually telling you, you have to come first with this, so that's the time to hate in order to get true love. That's just one example.
Okay.
Amen?
Yep, got it.
Once again, I wouldn't know that if I wasn't following him. You'd hear me making up something else. Well, if this person did this to my family, then you can go ahead and hate him, because I feel like that'd be me making up something. But the true things of knowing when the times are is just following him. When I do what he tells me to do, I'll never question him. Why? Because he is the way. He is the truth. And you'll see me doing things that in my Keith Smith mind will think, well, you shouldn't do it. That's why people used to say godly love is unconditional love, until you go in the Bible and it says, do not love the world or anything in the world. Once again, when I follow him, I do it right. When I follow me, I do what I think God should do, which means it's corrupt and definitely not pure. Other questions?
Yeah, I have a couple questions in Exodus.
Exodus?
Yeah. Exodus 3:14-15, where God says, I am who I am that I am. Mm-hmm. And then he says a little further down that he's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, God of Jacob. And so is he saying, and this is my name forever, and this is my memorial to all generations? Or is he saying that the name I am is his name forever, or the God of Abraham, Isaac, or is this just another character of God that he's showing?
So the I am is his name, which people have tried to get, and that's where we get the Jehovah and the Yahweh and all that from. It's name without vowels. And it is the one that transcends time and everything about that. So that is what he is forever. But he is also the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because that's important, because even our salvation comes through that seed of Abraham, and it follows that whole entire pattern. Some people make the mistake of thinking Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob just led to the Israelites. No, that was where the whole faith thing, God tunneled that through. And he says, I'm going to be the God of everybody that comes in through that. And he says, forever and ever. The ones who finally make it into heaven when everything else is destroyed and everybody else goes to hell are going to be the ones that follow that line. When I say bloodline, the biggest part for everybody that's not blood, of course, is Christ's blood is what he's talking about. You know what I mean? Because he's not talking about just the kids. He just went straight down to that line that led to Jesus, which leads to us. So he's in both cases, he is talking about that forever. That's why you hear him still talk about that even in the New Testament, both of those.
Okay. And so my other question is Exodus 3, I think it's 16. Moses. When he told the elders that that God heard their cry and he was going to deliver them out of Egypt to Canaan. Mm-hmm. But he was told to tell Pharaoh that he needed 3 days so they could go into the wilderness to sacrifice to God.
Mm-hmm.
So did he purposely lie to Pharaoh that they weren't coming back? And according to, you know what I'm saying? Because mm-hmm. They had no intention of coming back, right?
No, and I don't think I got to read that again, but I don't think he made that point. I think he knew they were going, they were leaving. You know what
and
I mean?
He told them it was, and then because remember Pharaoh said, well, go in the wilderness and sacrifice to God. And he was saying, well, they got work to do. You know, he didn't want to go because he's saying they got work to do. So it makes you think that he was under the assumption they were coming back because he asked specifically for 3 days.
I see what you're saying. That's a good point. Let me read that some more. You have to remind me again, but let me read that some more just to make sure. But I think there was a process before they left of, hey, let us go out here and sacrifice to our gods first, and then we're leaving, is what I got out of it. But you could be right. It could be something that I missed in it, you know, just assuming and going into it with the mindset. So let me definitely read it again. And yeah, that would be disturbing if it was a lie or it'd be misleading. So I want to make sure we see what it really says.
So How many days was it supposed to take them to go?
So it really took about a month. The time when they made it there and they sent in the spies, that's when they were there. They were at the promised land. You understand? So it was like 30. So I think it ended up being like 2 years. It really if you really just taking a walking journey, it would have taken about a month. Okay. But it took them about 2 years. And in that 2 years is where they messed up. And then that's where the rest of the 38 years came, because they had to be in the wilderness for punishment for everybody to die off until the kids came.
Because I was reading different articles, and they were saying, I think it was 5,000 or 8,252 kilo, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. But when they did the calculation, they said it really should have took them 11 days.
It's much shorter, because remember, they took the long way, so they didn't go through one area. You understand? But if they took the path that they took, it should have taken them a month. If they took the path to get there, like the shortest path, you're right, took about, 2 weeks, if that, you know, to get there. But he said in the beginning, the reason why I didn't take them through this land is because these people are going to try to start a war and it'll discourage them. So he took this other way. Now, if we just followed the exact path they took, that path would have taken about a month to get there. You know what I mean? And because they basically really took the long way. But now, even with that, I think it took 2 years from times and stuff that they had to settle and stuff that they went through. And then when they finally got there and he sent the spies in, was their time, and they blew it. And so then that other 38 years was what they had spent out there to kind of kill off the older ones that didn't make it into the promised land.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Other questions?
I have a question about the names of God.
Okay.
And when, like Jehovah's Witness think you're only supposed to say Jehovah. Mm-hmm. Or the model prayer says our Father. And but God has different names and for different meaning. Is it wrong not to say it, his name, those names sometime, or is it, what is the significance of it? We should be saying it some, different names, or can you just say our Father, just say God all the time?
We can say our Father. Those other names in the Old Testament give us who his character, as Sister Carolyn said earlier. Those are more character. And we call him his names because it's what he represents, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? And a lot of times the names did that. Just like he said, this is his name, that I am who I am. That's why I said people who said Jehovah, people who says Yahweh, all of these are from that word. But we can't say his name in vain. So what the Israelites didn't do is they didn't say it at all. And so sometimes we say God in order not to use his name in vain. So overall, he doesn't force, when you talk to me, make sure you say my name. We have to hallow be his name. We have to make sure to realize the power in his name. And that's him and Jesus in that same sense of the understanding of how his name works. So with that, but understand all the, Jehovah Jireh and Elohim, and those, we just understand those are titles, and they kind of explain him in a character or what he does in that. But you don't necessarily have to know that. So when people use the names, I know that it's a great thing and it's nice and all, and it gives you more understanding, but you get some people that make that factor of saying those, they will have more in the understanding that than to actually understanding God, if that makes sense.
Say that again, the last part again.
So people will tend to try to memorize those names, and they'll understand to say those names, but they still don't understand God. Does that make sense? Like sometimes we memorize things, like the verse in 1 Corinthians where it tells us that knowledge puffs up and love builds up. We miss out the love and the power of God. We're too busy gathering knowledge that's nice to know, but it's really not doing anything in our relationship and understanding and knowing God.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Other question.
And that made me think about, I was listening to Paul Washer, and he was saying that when he was in, I guess, seminaries or whatever, that they asked them who God was, and everybody said all these different words about God. And he said to the professor, well, that doesn't make any sense, because what do those names mean? And most of us know all these words, but we don't really know what they mean.
That's very well put. I mean, even just using a simple word, love, and we know in the New Testament it says God is love. That's why you get some people to get this emotional thing and call it love. You get some people that get this toughness and they call it love. You get some people that I did a whole bunch for you and I call it love. People who do nothing for you. And because humans have distorted the definitions of so many things. And that's why I say it. People will hear that. And that's why when we hear my provider, we think of it in a human sense of he'll give me whatever I want. You understand that? Not he's my provider. He is the source of what I need. You know what I mean? He provides my provision. He's the source. It's not my job, not my degree, not the money I have, not what I save. You know, we understand that. And the way I know that is because what the Bible says. I have to study the Bible to truly understand that. So if I go into it and I just read his name and I get the title, then the next thing I know, I'm defining it my way and I've already corrupted it. So the name is meaningless if I don't know the true definition of it. So that is very well put. Other questions? All right. Well done, family.